Welcome to Public Health Matters with Dr. Christina M. Madison, the founder and CEO of the Public Health Pharmacist, PLLC, a public health consulting firm. She is passionate about spreading knowledge on public health in order to create healthier and happier communities.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Public Health Matters with me, your host, Dr. Christina Madison, also known as the Public Health Pharmacist. I am so excited to have my next guest come on. He has so many titles and accolades, I can't even name all of them. Well, we'll try our best to put them all in the show notes so that you guys can see what he's working with. But I would say one of his biggest titles is dad. He just took his daughter to college. So talk about milestones. On top of having so many amazing leadership positions, he is an incredible parent. And I think that just goes to show, like, we really can do it all. So I've had lots of moms on this podcast, but I haven't had any dads lately. So I'm extremely excited to bring Neil on, and I'm going to let him introduce himself and his title, but I know him as a public health champion, and I can't wait to dive into all of my questions I have for you today.
Okay. Well, thank you, Christina, for those kind words and just for welcoming me on your podcast. You're right. So for the listeners out there, I'm Neil McKinnon, pharmacist by training, but currently the provost at Augusta University in Georgia. For those that may not be familiar, the provost is the chief academic officer of any university, really kind of helps, for example, oversees the deans and the research at my university. It's kind of called a super provost role. It does not mean I have any superpowers, just to clarify, but kind of a broader role. For example, I oversee diversity, equity, inclusion, and student life. We're also Georgia's only public academic health centers and with our own health system. So I'm also on the board of our health system. But looking forward to our next few moments together. And if we're going to talk about pharmacy and public health, I'm in. So thank you for this opportunity.
Well, Neil, I would like to say personally that I will disagree with you when you say that you do not have superpowers, because I think that your superpower is the power of what you've done with your public health background. And just thinking about, like, you being elevated to this incredible role and being able to make such an impact at, like, the top of a university level. So my first question to you is, obviously you got this role right around the pandemic times.
Yeah, yeah.
and how did you kind of, like, look at that strategically from, you know, from an administrative standpoint, but also from the safety standpoint of your student body and also your faculty? Can you talk a little bit about what your guys' strategy was and how you were able to pull in that public health background?
Yeah. No, great question. And I started this role in January 2021. So about, you know, 9 months into the pandemic. You know, it's interesting because I think looking back now, obviously we've had different peaks and valleys of the pandemic. I wasn't in this role clearly at the start of the pandemic, where a lot of restrictions like mask wearing and social distancing or sending students home went into place. But it's interesting, as I took over this role again in January 2021, I also ended up co-chairing what they call the COVID's Transition Committee. So the main committee looking at COVID for the university. It was interesting because, you know, things, if you think of the Delta wave and Omicron and just other things going out there, just when you think we're done with this, another wave happened. So it's really been a bit like a yo-yo as far as, you know, relaxing restrictions, putting things back into place, looking at reporting and other things that we're doing. And, you know, it's interesting when you're a public university, you have folks on, I would say, all sides. Just for example, we had faculty protesting last fall, asking to have masks mandated at our university, and we actually were not permitted to do so because we're part of the University System of Georgia. So we didn't have, that wasn't a decision we could make. I went out and met with the faculty that were protesting and said, you know, I hear what you're saying, and obviously there's science to support what you're asking, but But that was kind of a surreal moment too, of just meeting with faculty that were asking, you know, can we please require masks?
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, I feel like a similar situation happened here for our School of Public Health, where we had faculty that were very upset when our governor chose, you know, because they're a whole Nevada higher education system, to relax the mask mandate, because it's not just about the student safety, but it's the faculty safety as well, especially if you have faculty members who have compromised immune systems or health conditions that they feel like they're, you know, taking their lives at their own risk when they go into the classroom. So it's not just about teaching and educating the next generation of professionals, but it's like, wow, now I need to really think about my own personal safety.
Oh, you're exactly right. We have 1,800 faculty and about 4,200 staff. So it's a lot of, you know, people with, like you say, with some of that have with health conditions that you're worried about. And certainly as we're bringing our students back into, you know, a packed classroom, what's the comfort level, not just of the students, but of the professor, the faculty member in front of that class as well. So it was certainly a lot to balance. Like I certainly wouldn't claim we got it perfect or right, but it was interesting, as you say, just to kind of assume that leadership role kind of partway through the pandemic. And again, as we've had these different, spikes and things like that. And of course, now monkeypox. So who knows what's next as well.
Yes, monkeypox, right? Like, I'm like, yes, we need another plague, please. Like, this one wasn't really challenging me. So I really felt like, you know, the universe decided that it wanted to give me something else so that I could still be gainfully employed. Because, you know, I do infectious disease for a living. So I was like, absolutely, let's take this on, right? And, you know, as right as all of our students are going right back into the classroom and having, being in dorms and close contact. Yeah, it's just fantastic, right? Like, we're going to be gainfully employed, right, Neil?
I think there's always going to be something infectious disease related. You know, it's interesting. I was actually in Toronto, Ontario in February 2020 when, you know, the first cases were reporting. I was at the Canadian Society of Hospital Pharmacists conference as a speaker. And the very last thing in the conference, they squeezed in a new speaker that wasn't part of the original program. It was the ID physician who oversaw the SARS outbreak in Toronto. And so she was basically saying, you know, this is what COVID's looking like. And, you know, so if you look at the history going back, you know, Spanish influenza and years before that, there's always, yeah, I think ID is a good career choice to be in. You're always going to have work to do.
Yes. So shout out to all of our infectious disease fellow practitioners in addition to public health, right? So, you know, thinking about public health, I mean, obviously there's so many different aspects to it, and really thinking about the health of the many versus the health of the one. And I think that concept and sort of that shared community thought process and really elevating and uplifting everyone in a community is a new concept that really got a lot of light shown on it during the pandemic. I know that you said that you discuss and kind of oversee some of the diversity, inclusion, equity, aspects of your university. I'm curious, you know, as we've seen sort of the social turmoil and political climate changing, how have you been able to navigate that space and how are you seeing pharmacy and then also healthcare showing up in that space in a more meaningful way?
Yeah. Well, certainly there is a role for pharmacy in public health within that space. For to be clear, you know, if you look at health inequities and disparities, it should be concerning to all of us. It doesn't matter your ethnic background or what category you fit in. I just flew back last night from Scotland, so I've been in Scotland the past week, kind of meeting with their. We have two university partners and meeting with some of their healthcare leaders there, and you know, very different healthcare system. But you know, it makes you, anytime you spend time immersed in a different healthcare system, it almost makes you reflect more on, gee, you know, the US, this is what we're doing well, this is what we're not doing well. And clearly the area around health inequities is an area where we're not doing well. And that's not just a subjective statement. You look at any objective data comparing us to other Western developed nations. You know, here in Georgia as well, moving to the state 18 months ago has some actually the worst outcomes, in especially rural parts of Georgia. A lot of my work has been looking over my career in kind of rural-urban differences and Unfortunately, there's a lot of material to work with here in Georgia. So whether you look at, you know, cancer rates or infant mortality rates, almost any health outcome, there's parts of rural Georgia that would be very similar to a third world country. So it's, I would argue there's pharmacists in particular, you know, pharmacists kind of fit this neat space, Christina, where certainly we're trained to provide care at the individual patient level, you know, through back in the day calling that pharmaceutical care. But at the same time, I think pharmacists also have an increasing role in population health, which is, of course, you know, if you think of public health, it's like you said, it's looking at populations. So so I think, you know, pharmacists, we can use our skill set, again, one patient at a time, but also look at populations of patients. So I think there definitely is a role. You know, the American Public Health Association, I did not look this up this morning, so I can't say if it's still there, but for years, if you look in their website and they list kind of one of their first pages on the website, who does public health, they list, you know, physicians, nurses, sanitarians, it's a long list. Pharmacists actually aren't on that list. And to me, that's always been kind of a sad omission, because I would argue pharmacists actually can contribute broadly to public health.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Obviously, you know, my claim to fame is that I am like out there talking about why pharmacists need to be integrated in literally every public health department in the country. You know, that's my background. You know, I had the, you know, incredible opportunity at the very beginning of my professional career within academia to be the clinical pharmacist for a health department. And then through that role, I was like, holy crikey, like, why is this not like every freaking health department, right? So yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, we need to do more for the recognition of just public health in general, but then the integration of public health into allied health professional education. Because, you know, a lot of what was going on with COVID seemed to be so out of the blue and off the norm. But like those of us who've worked in public health for years, in particular, people who've worked with like things like tuberculosis and HIV, were like, wait a minute, like we've been dealing with this like for decades. And you're just like now like, oh, okay, you're just coming to the party. You know, I'm like, the last TB sanatorium in this country closed in 2009. Like, that wasn't that long ago. Oh, no. You know, and that was in Lantana, Florida. I know, because I did a mini fellowship there with the AJ Hawley Hospital before, because I was doing direct patient care and TB, and I was able to get these like pharmacist-led services. But I'm like, these are things that every health professional should know about: contact tracing, isolation protocols, you know, population health, social vulnerability indexes, why we need to get access to care, access to not just care, but quality care. I mean, obviously you can see I'm very passionate.
Well, and you know, to give you a shout out, I'm sure your listeners might know your background, but to be, you know, a past president of a state Public Health Association. How cool is that? I mean, that's, I don't know if you're the only one in history, but you
there's
certainly-
There's two of us.
Okay, so there's 52, okay.
The other gentleman is actually over a public health university. I think he's an associate dean of the public health, School of Public Health in Maryland.
Oh, cool. Well, yeah, you know, that's, so being pharmacists, we are starting to take over, which is a good thing too, so.
Yeah. And look at you taking over an entire university. Like, are you the only pharmacist provost in the country?
Well, you know, so this is kind of an interesting story. So, you know, I was, so the quick answer is no, but I think that's an area where there are some pharmacists now that are, and I don't want to certainly claim I have an all-inclusive list, because I'm sure I'll admit someone, but, you know, some University of Alabama, Jim Dalton, who was the pharmacy dean at University of Michigan. There's the provost at Farley Dickinson was a pharmacy dean there as well. And then most recently, someone you probably know, Marie Chisholm Burns, just became the provost at Oregon Health Sciences University. She and I actually just did a podcast for ASHP about 3 or 4 weeks
That's
ago.
That's awesome. We're
starting to, you know, slip in. I think Ole Miss as well, maybe. So yeah, there's a few of us. I think historically it's been a bit of a leap, because, you know, pharmacists, from a university world anyway, are perceived as, you know, pharmacy schools are kind of, you know, smaller professional schools, you know, not maybe as big as like engineering or arts and sciences, but I think, you know, hopefully if we do well, maybe we can start to convince, you know, university presidents and chancellors that pharmacists, we can kick butt wherever we go. How about that?
Well, so first and foremost, I think the skill sets that we have are so unique and are often not highlighted. And so I always tease people and I say, you know, if you have a residency trained pharmacist, they can literally do any job because we basically got thrown in to the wolves and we're told, make this work, right? Like make it work and figure it out. Like, you know, the ability to digest and understand and then communicate evidence-based medicine. So I think that's another part of the profession that we don't often discuss, but we are asked so often to do, you know, in-depth research in new drugs, new discoveries, research, you know, all of these different things that can greatly impact not just patient care, but then, you know, moving forward, any future potential research. And so I know you're pretty involved in research at your institution. Obviously with your new leadership role, I don't know if you're directly working within that space because you've got so many other, you know, priorities, but I'm just curious, like, because I know you did a lot of research before you came to this role, like what would you tell somebody who was either interested in doing research or wanted to expand sort of their skill set? Because I think that research is another way to like unlock some of these other leadership positions that I think is part of why, I mean, I can't say it for certain, but part of why you were such an attractive candidate for this position.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And to answer your question, I still do research as a pro. That was something I felt, you know, when I actually, you know, interviewed for the job was offered to me. I spoke to our president. I said, you know, if possible, I would still like to have a research program. And he agreed to that. And so, yeah, still publishing. Actually, have tomorrow morning have a research meeting. And it's to me as a provost who I want to be a role model to my faculty. And so that means spending time in the classroom. I'm tomorrow evening I'm spending some time with about 30 undergraduate students doing a career planning workshop. I'm teaching a class to our dermatology residents. On Friday afternoon. So in research is part of that as well. I think, you know, and if I think of, the role of maybe the role of pharmacists in public health research, I think there's also a nice fit there often. And so certainly in the last, I would say in particular, probably last 7-8 years, a lot of my research is what you would kind of consider maybe public health research. I started with the opioid epidemic. I was in Cincinnati at the time, the pharmacy dean there, and that was a city really hard hit by that. So I ended up looking at the spread of the opioid crisis, the role of pharmacists in providing naloxone and other challenges, how emergency departments in that state were really getting slammed by dealing with that pandemic. And then it was interesting, I was working with an epidemiologist who was very good at kind of mapping spreads of pandemics. He looked at HIV AIDS and malaria and different things. And so he was working with me on the opioid crisis. So when COVID hit in March 2020, he and I kind of said, well, you know, could we take these tools that we're looking at the spread of one pandemic, which is the opioid crisis, and try to apply those to the spread of COVID? And so we started doing that. And then Christina, so the last 2 years, we've published about a dozen papers looking at, a lot of geographic and health disparities related to COVID. The other part I think that's cool about public health, when I had the opportunity to direct the State Office of Rural Healthcare in Arizona, and so in that work closely with the state leaders and in this hidden language of health policy briefs and how they're used. And so as we started working on COVID, we thought, yes, we want to have peer reviewed publications, but the issues that we were dealing with in March and April and May 2020, we really felt strongly that, the Department of Health in Ohio really need to see what we are working on. And so we did health policy briefs for the Ohio Department of Health. And this was a kind of probably one of the coolest moments in my life, Christina. So we did two of them. Then the third one we did was looking at kind of how the pandemic was impacting kind of rural parts of Ohio a little differently. And it was a Wednesday afternoon, and I sent our policy, health policy brief to the director of the Ohio Department of Health. And then the next day on Thursday, Governor Mike DeWine was using it in his press conference, his daily press conference he did for the public. So that was kind of cool to see, you know, the impact of creating a health policy brief and how it was being used already by the governor of that state.
Oh my goodness. You, I mean, for those who are listening, you can't see, but I'm like over here snapping and like high-fiving. Like, seriously, you know, I really appreciate the fact that you brought up the public policy side, because pharmacists can be so impactful in the legislative realm. And, you know, I always say, like, if it's not in the law, if it's not written down, it's not going to happen. And, you know, there's so much advocacy work that we can do through, you know, legislative change and, you know, making, you know, those kinds of reports and then them turning around being used in a governor's speech. I mean, that's incredible. You know, I just recently participated in a Senate hearing here for our Senator Jackie Rosen, and it was all about, you know, the changes with prescription drug prices and the new legislation that was just passed, the Inflation Reduction Act. And I was thinking, I was sitting there, obviously it was like a surreal moment, right? So I'm the only healthcare professional there. There's like a representative from AARP, there's someone from the seniors, there's like a patient, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, I wonder how many opportunities pharmacists get to do this. And that I was like, cool. Yeah. And I was just like, I was so flabbergasted because I'm like, why aren't there more pharmacists doing this? You know, like this entire bill is about prescription drug prices practically, right? And negotiations with Medicare. Why aren't pharmacists the first person that's being thought of? And so that's, you know, part of my advocacy work. And I know, I'm sure it is yours as well, you know, especially with your work within, you know, rural areas and just advocating for that access point and understanding that pharmacists truly are the most accessible healthcare professional. We can collaborate with any other healthcare professional. We can provide direct patient care. We can do healthcare policy. We can basically do it all. So, and I feel like you're wrapped up in that little package. And I'm like, here you go. Like, if you ever thought that there wasn't a way that you could literally do it all and be a parent.
Well, and kudos to you too for being, you know, part of that most recent meeting and being a pharmacist in the room. And I have to admit, you know, I really, and I think probably many pharmacists listening to this, you know, maybe don't, maybe in no fault of their own, but really I have to admit, like for years, I had no idea kind of how legislation works and legislative process and bills and appropriation stuff. It wasn't until, you know, I directed the state office of rural healthcare in Arizona that I started to get like, oh, this is how things get done, you know, behind the curtain. And that was really enlightening to see that. And so again, things like health policy briefs and, you know, how governments use those, is really critical. So there definitely is a role for that. I think, you know, again, if I think of some other countries, probably have done a better job of really working with government. I'll just give an example, originally from Canada. So this small independent pharmacy where I briefly worked in my hometown of Bridgewater, Nova Scotia, this June, so 2 months ago, I had an opportunity to go back there. And a former student of mine now owns that independent pharmacy.
Oh, cool.
And what's really cool is that in that province, the pharmacists have been working closely with government and others, and they can now independently prescribe for minor ailments for almost 30 different conditions. And so instead of going to a physician to get, you know, whether it's, you know, otitis media treatment or Lyme disease or even birth control, you go directly now to the pharmacy. Pam can prescribe it there, dispense it. And what that does, it takes less pressure off the physicians and kind of the backlog in that country. Again, just coming back from Scotland, very similar there, where the scope of pharmacists practice in that country, oh my goodness. And we were meeting with, you know, healthcare leaders in that country, non-pharmacists, who were singing the praises of pharmacists and definitely seeing the value of what pharmacists can add to the system. So yeah, so we need to clone you, Christine, and have you in every state so that there's somebody in those kinds of meetings there. Because I think if we don't understand how policy gets made, then we can't contribute to an effective way. And it's not just, it's not just for, you know, the government affairs folks at our national associations. This should be at a grassroots level.
Absolutely. Well, oh my goodness, this has been such an incredible conversation. I know your time is valuable, and I just really want to thank you. Before we end our conversation, I just want to know, like, if there was, like, if you could talk to your past self, seeing how much you've been able to achieve, currently, what would be the one thing that you would tell your past self to help either accelerate or help you to get to where you are now?
Oh my goodness, yeah, that's a great, great question. I would say even like, this is sounds like a fairly cliche thing, but definitely, take more risks. I think for me, just for example, when I moved from Canada to Arizona and I joined a college of public health, a school of public health, that was scary, but that was a risk now that has like paid off so many times to have that, for example, just to understand what it's like, as a pharmacist to be surrounded by public health professionals and faculty and to understand how they think and view things. That was a huge risk. Obviously coming here to be a provost and stepping away from being a dean was a risk. But I think, in life, you have to take calculated risks. But, I think pharmacists, I think you alluded to this earlier, Christina, I think our foundational training is so solid, especially those pharmacists like ourselves that have done residency training, then you are really positioned well to take risks in life. And I think most of the time you're going to succeed. So I think there's maybe some listeners who might feel like they're kind of stuck in a rut or, what's next? But man, I think the sky's the limit for the profession. I think pharmacists are infiltrating everything, and which is a good thing. I think we're actually, public health is stronger in this country when pharmacists are key players in the system.
Thank you so much for those words of wisdom. And I would definitely want to echo that sentiment. So many of the fantastic opportunities that I have had is because I was like, all about the what I call the messy yes, which yes. is one of my girlfriend says this all the time. It's like you don't know exactly what you're gonna do, but you'll figure it out. But yeah, you know that the opportunity is there. So it's like the messy yes,
I love it.
Awesome. All right. Well, if people want to find you, if they want to, follow you, see what you're up to, what would be the best place for people to connect with you after today's episode?
Yeah, well, sure. Twitter or Instagram at AUG_provost. Now, we'll warn you, it's not all pharmacy content, but certainly, I do post, and certainly anytime we have new studies, should share those articles as well. So we've got a new COVID study that'll be coming out in the next couple of weeks there. So yeah, that'd be great. And Christy, I just want to thank you again for being such a stellar role model in this space. Oh my goodness. I mean, from a pharmacist being on Good Morning America to all the things you do that aren't as glamorous behind the scenes that only you know about, clearly, you're making an impact in our profession in a profound way, and a real trailblazer for public health. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Again, I am Dr. Christina Madison, your host, and I just wanted to say, if you want to find out about more episodes with fantastic, impactful, and inspirational guests such as Provost McKinnon, I would encourage you to follow us and Pharmacy Times. And you can also follow me at The Public Health Pharmacist. And remember, public health matters.
Stay safe, be well, and remember, public health matters.